Today we're going to speak to an expert about the Lincoln assassination at the Ford Theater while Lincoln was watching a play. And, it was horrible. You kind of don't expect that when you go to a theater to watch a play. And I understand the play wasn't even really that good.
Ron Van Dam is an experienced talk show host. Do not attempt to try this at home.
Too soon?
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing. Whatever.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show. Oh. Surprise.
Back, relax, grab a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, whatever your liquid libation may be in the morning, and join us as we take a look at the world around us. As much as it's a pleasure to be with you, the pleasure is actually all yours. And now, here's your host, Ron Van Dam.
Thank you very much, Julie. Welcome to the program. How are you today? Good, fine. I won't even wait for your response. It's not worth it to me. Well, here we are, just you and me. Unfortunately for me. It's just you and no, say hello to everybody all over the place. You're all over the place. Actually, if you've listened to the show before, I'm all over the place. Today we're going to speak to an author who is fascinating. It's coming up pretty soon in the program. I will speak in great length with this particular gentleman about the assassination of Lincoln. And it's interesting, when you get to these assassination conversations, you find that there's always a door that can be opened. Or, you know, what really happened? I wasn't there. I know a lot of people think I'm old, but I wasn't there. I was down the street at the bar. Now, I wasn't there. That was a different time back in the 1800s, quite obviously. I mean, even time machines don't go that far back. They kind of stop at 1912. So Lincoln decides, as I understand it, to go to the Ford Theater in Washington, D.C., to see a play. I mean, got tickets from a friend, and you go, you know, you go. I don't know what play it was, but apparently it didn't work out for Abraham. By the way, do you think people just called him Abe, or do you think they called him Abraham? Abraham is actually a very Jewish kind of name. I think it was one of the big things there, you know, in the Jewish thing, the Abraham walking around, Moses and Abraham and Vinny. No, that's a different thing. Anyway, I don't know what play he was seeing. I have a feeling it was Cats, because that play's been around for a long time, and probably that's the play he was seeing. And somehow John Wilkes Booth gets into the balcony. I mean, how great was security back then? Here's the president sitting in the balcony watching a play, watching Cats, and Booth somehow gets past security. How did he get past security? How much security was there? Was security simply a guy in a suit sitting next to Lincoln named Bob? Was that the security back then for the president? with a civil war going on, with a target on his head, literally. That's the security. So I guess part of the conspiracy theory would be, how did John Wilkes Booth with a gun get up to the balcony? I mean, how's that possible? Was he looking for the men's room and they said it's upstairs? And he got upstairs and went, oh my God, it's Lincoln. It's my perfect opportunity. I don't know how that happened. Again, I was not there. So this gentleman, this author, is going to speak to us today, and we're going to find out what may have really happened that night. Was there a conspiracy? Were there more people involved? It seems like there could have been. I don't know. Here's the deal, though. If you're going to assassinate a president in the balcony of a theater, I would have just, like, gone out the fire escape after doing that, or, like, gone downstairs and run out really fast. Instead, for some reason, Booth might have been a little bit on the nutty side. Well, you'd have to be to shoot the president. But after shooting him, instead of, like, quietly, like, leaving through the back door, he jumps from the balcony onto the stage, breaks his leg or his foot or something, and yells out, hey, this place sucks. I don't know what he yelled out. E pluribus unum? I don't know. And so everybody could see, like, what happened in the whole theater, and then he runs out of the place. I mean, security was horrible. Maybe people thought that was part of the play. That could have been it. You don't know these days, or even back then. Although you might have figured out that it didn't make any sense, because on the stage it's all cats. And then here's a guy who jumps from the balcony. That kind of doesn't make sense in the storyline of the play. You know, there are, like, no human beings on the stage, and then Booth jumps on it, and, like, it's just Booth and all the cats. Doesn't make sense. That wouldn't make sense to me. Doesn't make sense. Anyway, that's what we're going to be talking about today on the program. So gear up for this. It's going to be a lot of fun. I, you know, there's so many unsolved mysteries like that. There's the assassination of President Kennedy. And as you know, there were so many theories and conspiracies surrounding that, to the point that I believe we'll never know what actually happened on that day. Just with, like, with Lincoln. We hear the stories that are in the textbooks, but they're not necessarily true. Look at Columbus, man. In Columbus, not Columbus, Ohio, Columbus, the explorer guy, he apparently was, to put it mildly, a jerk. He was a jerk. A lot of jerks in history. Columbus, Trump, I think those are the only two. Well, those are the biggest jerks. Columbus apparently was a jerk. He was a womanizer. Wow, it is just like Trump. He made false claims about what he was actually doing. Wow, that is just like Trump. Huh. Interesting. And then they got off the boat, and they started they created havoc all over the place. Well, it does sound like Trump. Huh. Can you name the three boats that Columbus employed in order to get to the New World, to get away from the Old World? The Old World was just, like, getting too old. They had to find a new one. And then the nerve of Columbus coming over here and saying, I've discovered America and all the people on it who apparently discovered it before me. How can you discover something that's already been discovered? I mean, the people are standing there. They're walking around shooting turkeys and, you know, they got their reservations, and which are very hard to get in America. You can't get a reservation that easily. You got to call ahead way in advance. I mean, you know, they were here. The Indians were here. They were living a life. They were farming. They were doing their thing. And then Columbus has got the nerve to say, well, I'm the first person here. I discovered the land. And there are people here already. They've got condos here. What are you discovering? That's like me walking into Providence, Rhode Island, and I've never been there before. And I park the car, and I get a flag out of the trunk of my car, and I throw it into the ground. I'm discovering Providence. Yeah, you are, but people are here already. You're not discovering anything. We're discovering that you're a jerk. Discovering America. You're crazy. You're nuts. What a horrible time that was, though. What a horrible time. When people had arguments, they solved their arguments with duels. Way back there with Alexander Hamilton and Hamilton Beach and Aaron Burr and all those people. I don't like the way you look. That's it. 12 o'clock tomorrow on the streets. Bring your gun. Oh, actually, you don't look that bad. I don't care. We got to do this. That's part of our deal. People used to just challenge each other to duels. They'd take out a white glove, slap the other person in the face, and then your life is in jeopardy. That's just it's weird. And the old West. The old West. That was brutal. They were trying to discover gold. Well, they knew what gold was. They were trying to get some gold. They would pan for gold, which was just taking a pan and sifting the dirt and seeing if there was gold in there. That's panning. And people used to kill each other for the gold. And in the old West, I mean, the gunslingers would come into town and shoot them up and rob the banks. And I mean, it was like Chicago and Detroit, that bad. I don't know, man. It was. Now we're in a very civilized time. Very civilized time. And this is certainly so much better, where it doesn't take someone with a gun to screw you. All they have to do is just hack into your system. That's it. That's how we get retribution. Oh yeah. I'm going to find out what your social security number is, and I'm going to charge things to your account. Oh no. Oh no, please don't do that. Oh no, 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 no. Yeah, that's what it is, man. It's crazy. All right, we're going to take a commercial break. When we come back, we're going to talk to this incredible man who might have some insight on what happened at the Ford Theater that night when Lincoln was shot in the back of the head. What actually happened? Are there any new revelations after all of this time? Will we ever know? We'll find out right after these words.
When you reach for a beer, what are you looking for? The finest malts, grains, and hops? An artisan ale that represents a modern take on traditional brewing techniques that master brewers have refined and treasured for years. A true beer drinking experience. Or like most of us, are you just looking to get fucked up on the cheap? Well, if you're like the rest of us, congratulations, your beer is here. It's Fockenhalter. It's not a great beer. It's not even a good beer. It's a beer that's $4 a case, and it's strong enough to melt the chrome off a trailer hitch. So kiss your liver goodbye and say hello to Fockenhalter. It's beer.
John Cifasio joins us now. Interesting book, Decapitating the Union. It's about Abraham Lincoln's assassination, what really happened and why. After all these years and all the history books, there really haven't been any real definitive answers other than what's printed. Is that correct?
That is generally correct. There have been a lot of theories, but nothing nothing definite. There's still a lot of confusion, a lot of mysteries, a lot of conundrums, a lot of enigmas, a lot of uncertainties. And it was with that in mind that I had tried to achieve a greater consensus.
How did you go about getting beyond what is printed in those history books?
Well, I read 125 books, which is all there is, actually, devoted to the assassination and the attempted assassinations that occurred on April 14th, 1865. And not only that, but I read countless manuscripts, articles, newspapers, and so forth. It took me 5 years of study and 5 years of writing to create the book. And I think my general purpose, as I said, was to achieve a greater consensus, and in the process, to weed out the theories that just didn't make sense to me, and to prove beyond a reasonable doubt the one that did, namely the complicity of the Confederate government, and specifically its leaders, Jefferson Davis, President, Judah Benjamin, the Secretary of State, Alexander Stevens, the Vice President, and to a lesser extent, James Seddon, the Secretary of War. And I believe I accomplished that. I say that with all due modesty, because there are many, many reviews of the book. Amazon has 37, 34 of which give it 5 stars, which is the maximum. And they're almost unanimous in asserting that, yes, I achieved my purpose. They are convinced that, in fact, the Confederate government and its Secret Service Bureau were complicit in the assassination and the attempted assassinations.
Okay, before we get into that, which is fascinating, as I understand it, this isn't some type of subject matter that came up just out of the clear blue. I understand that since you were a kid, you've been fascinated with history and the correction and how these major events actually took place, the stories behind the stories. Is that true?
That is absolutely true. Yes, I have a fascination with history, as so many people do. And I began my interest in the Civil War when I was 16, and I'm still at it. I won't tell you how old I am. Suffice it to say that I'm in my 70s.
Okay.
I acquired a particular fascination with the events of April 14th, 1865, in 2009, when I looked around and I said, as I said earlier, I found so much uncertainty surrounding such a significant monumental event in world history that I felt something needed to be done. And so I began to study it, as I said, reading all the materials I mentioned. And I discovered that the War Department in 1865, right after the assassination in April, the War Department was under the leadership of Edwin Stanton, the Secretary of War, and all of the federal prosecutors were convinced that the Confederate government was complicit at that time. But what happened was that through a very clever ploy, the head of the Secret Service, the Confederate Secret Service in Canada, whose name was Jacob Thompson, arranged for witnesses to deliberately plant perjury in the trial of the assassins in May and June of 1865. That is to say, perjury that was intended to be exposed as such. And it was exposed as such, and the result was that the case against the Confederate leadership collapsed and went into hibernation effectively for about 125 years. Then, in 1988, three magnificent historians, all of whom are now deceased, incidentally, namely William Tidwell, James O. Hall — Hall is the dean, or the grandfather, if you will, of assassination historians — and David Gaddy, did massive research into the issue and concluded that, in fact, the War Department and the federal prosecutors had it right the first time in April of 65. They published a book, Tidwell, Hall, and Gaddy did, in 1988 a seminal work called Come Retribution, where they asserted categorically, unequivocally, that yes, the Confederate government was complicit. Now, since then, many, many assassination historians and scholars have come around to their view, including big names like William Hanchett, Richard Current, Stephen Sears, and H. Donald Winkler, among others. They are convinced that Tidwell, Hall, and Getty got it right. They got it right. The Confederate government was, in fact, complicit. And, in fact, we even have a couple of smoking guns, if you will, or near smoking guns. If you'd like to hear about them,
sure.
I'm happy to tell you.
I would love to hear about them.
Okay. We have a fellow by the name of Godfrey Hyams testified at the trial of the conspirators in May and June of 1865. He testified that one of the Confederate Secret Service operatives, whose name was Dr. Luke P. Blackburn, had a scheme whereby he was going to spread pestilence in the North. Yellow fever and smallpox. We know with certainty that this scheme was implemented, and we know with certainty that Jefferson Davis knew about it. Part of the scheme involved sending infected shirts, or at least shirts that they believed were infected.
Whoa.
They didn't know at the time that you can't pass yellow fever except by mosquitoes. They didn't know that. They thought they could pass it with infected clothing. So part of the scheme involved sending infected, quote, infected shirts to Abraham Lincoln as a gift from an anonymous benefactor.
Wow.
We know that Jefferson Davis, the president of the Confederate States of America, knew about this scheme because a letter survived the flames from one Kenzie John Stewart, who was an Episcopalian minister turned Confederate agent, in which he begged and pleaded with Jefferson Davis to cease and desist from this plot because, as he said, it could not possibly find favor with God. And what is most interesting is that we know Davis ignored the letter because 4 months later the plot was still on and the trunks were still full of, quote, infected clothing, according to Hyams. Now, that's pretty close to a smoking gun, because we know that Davis, in fact, was aware of a plot to assassinate the President of the United States. Now, here's another smoking gun. John Surratt, a man named John Surratt, was John Wilkes Booth's right hand. After the assassination, in which, of course, he was complicit, he first went to Canada, then to Europe, and he wound up in Italy, where he sought refuge with the papal Zouaves. And while there, he met an old friend that he had known at St. Charles Academy in Baltimore 3 years earlier. Because he was out of American jurisdiction, and perhaps also because he was influenced by alcohol, and perhaps because he was talking to his friend, he admitted to St. Marie that he and Booth had spent $10,000 on their plot to kill Lincoln. That's $280,000 in today's money. Well, where on earth would this unemployed son of a boarding house keeper and his unemployed actor friend get $280,000 if not from the Confederate government or its supporters?
Right.
If I'm making myself clear.
Very much so. It's
one final, if I may, just throw one final footnote in here. He said to St. Marie asked Surratt if Jefferson Davis was involved, and Surratt's answer was, "I am not going to tell you," which is as good as an affirmative answer,
right?
Because it means I know, and yes, Davis was complicit. Otherwise, he would have said, "I don't know,"
absolutely,
or "I know," and I know that Davis was innocent. He said neither.
This has happened quite a bit through history, where the layperson would think that the government is a squeaky clean operation, but politics have become quite tumultuous, even to this extent. As a matter of fact, do you draw any parallel between the Kennedy assassination, the Warren Commission, and the Lincoln assassination?
Not really, even though I don't pretend to know, obviously, with certainty what happened as far as November 22nd, 1963 is concerned.
Yep,
I kind of lean toward the theory that it was, in fact, in this case, a lone gunman. Bugliosi's tome, which is about 1,500 pages, came to that conclusion that Oswald, in fact, was a lone gunman. You know, and he just had extraordinary luck as far as his marksmanship was concerned. But as far as the Lincoln assassination, I don't have a doubt left in my mind that it was not a lone, half-crazed actor who just happened to hate Lincoln. You know, that's the pablum, the rogue operation myth that has persisted into our own time. No, it is absolutely not true, but no, there are not too many parallels between the two events.
Is the reason that the investigation had slept for so long because of where we were socially back then, our trust in government, etc.?
I don't think it was so much the trust in government. As I said, the case against the Confederate leadership collapsed because of the exposed perjury. It was deliberately planted. But what happened after the trial in June and July of 1865 and going forward is that there was a tremendous momentum to put this thing behind us. Lincoln was dead. There was nothing that could do, and no one could do anything about that. And it was time to get on with all the other problems that were facing the country, namely Reconstruction. Furthermore, the trial itself was extremely oppressive. It was hot as blazes in Washington in that summer. Obviously, they didn't have fans or air conditioning. So everyone was just suffering. And the tedium was enormous and stifling. And it was a gruesome experience for everyone, and no one wanted to do it again, or perhaps even again. And as a result, many, many people who were involved in the conspiracy walked. They were never charged, or if charged, they were released. They were never tried. They were never convicted. They were never brought to the bar of justice. I'm talking about dozens, maybe hundreds of people who were in some way involved in the conspiracy, either directly or indirectly, on the edges, on the periphery, but they were involved and they got away with murder and attempted murder, because there were at least four other, we know with certainty that there were four other attempted assassinations that night, and there may have been as many as 15. There's some evidence. There is a letter in existence that says if everything had gone according to plan, if everything had gone according to schedule, as it was laid out by the Confederate Secret Service, 15 Yankees would be dead. There is such a letter in existence whose authenticity has never been questioned.
Well, obviously now, after so many years, it kind of doesn't matter unless you want to correct the history books and just make that proper.
Well, I think if I may say so, I think we need to do that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the popular notion that Booth was this half-crazed actor who acted on his own is nonsense. But, you know, there's so many things in history like that.
Yes, there are.
You know, as soon as you get below the surface, you get into human nature, and you get into complications that you never imagined existed. And that's certainly the case here. You know, you start out with this notion that Booth was this half-crazed actor, this lone gunman.
Right.
And after 5 years of study, you find out that it's a huge myth. And you know, you're hit in the face with reality, and that's true with, as I say, so many. If you study Washington's life, or Napoleon's life, or Julius Caesar's life, and so forth, you'd come to the same conclusions. You know, that there's so much more than meets the eye.
Do you believe that if that had taken place in modern history, that it would have been resolved quickly? Although you do have the Kennedy situation, which doesn't seem to be.
I don't know that it would have been. I cannot say that with any degree of certainty. I don't know that it would have been. I do think, though, that more people would have been brought to the bar of justice had something like that happened today, because we would not have been put off and dissuaded from holding further trials because of the oppressive nature of the only one that was held.
Right.
So I do think that we would have gone further with it today than they did then. As a matter of fact, Thomas Jones was his name. He was the head of the Confederate Secret Service in Maryland. He expressed great surprise, as he put it, that the retribution taken by the Northern government for Abraham Lincoln's assassination stopped where it did. Mm. He was very surprised.
John, and we've talked about the how and what happened. Let's delve just for a second into the why. Was what Lincoln was doing so stifling?
No, it wasn't that. Well, yes and no. Yes, of course they considered Lincoln a tyrant, the Southerners who supported the Southern cause.
Sure.
But it wasn't so much that. What it was that on April 9th, a mere 5 days earlier, Robert E. Lee had surrendered the Army of Northern Virginia to Ulysses S. Grant. And so the Confederate leadership knew that, you know, the jig was up. They weren't going to win the war. There wasn't going to be any victory. And so this was a last-ditch effort to pull the chestnuts out of the fire. This was the only option left to them, was retribution. That's why Tidwell, Hall, and Getty titled their book, Come Retribution. This was the only option left to them, the last possibility to avert the catastrophe that they felt was upon them. And that was multiple assassinations, decapitate the government, assassinate not only the president, but also the vice president, the secretary of state, the secretary of war, and Lieutenant General of the Armies, Ulysses Grant. Mm-hmm. With so much confusion in the government, it would grind to a halt. With so much confusion in the military, it would grind to a halt, and thereby provide an opening for the 150,000 Confederate troops who were still in the field. There were still five armies in the field that hadn't surrendered, namely Joe Johnston's in the Carolinas, John Mosby's in Virginia, Kirby Smith's in the Trans-Mississippi, Taylor's Army of Tennessee, or what was left of it after the battles of Franklin and Nashville, and of course Nathan Bedford Forrest, and only God knew where he was. So there were still five Confederate armies in the field that might conceivably have a snatched victory from the jaws of defeat had the Confederate government been able to engineer the decapitation of the Union government. It was a long shot, very long. But it was the only thing left to them.
Yeah, I guess we tend to forget when we just talk about it on the surface that blood was spilled, lives were lost. It was a literal war, and to take somebody else's life in the name of victory is what the war was about. So this was not a far stretch of an incredible act. It was part of the act of war.
Absolutely. Absolutely. They considered the President of the United States, after all, he was Commander-in-Chief of the Army and Navy. So he was a legitimate target, as far as they were concerned. He was a legitimate target, and so was everyone else. But you know what? The legitimacy of the target doesn't even matter. They would have killed him anyway, or tried to, irrespective of whether they considered them legitimate targets or not. It was the only thing left to them. Mm-hmm. They had no way. I mean, the catastrophe was upon them. 4 million suddenly free slaves were suddenly going to be free in their midst. What on earth were they going to do with them?
Right.
So you had the social issue, the economic issue. They had literally billions, not millions, billions of dollars invested in their slaves, all lost overnight with the signing of a document by Abraham Lincoln, the Emancipation Proclamation. And they were going to lose their political independence. So you had a political catastrophe, a social catastrophe, and an economic catastrophe.
Well,
and of course, a cultural one. Well, and they didn't want to lose their culture and their way of life.
We always have political catastrophes. We're going through one right now. So that's kind of normal.
That is absolutely true. Yeah. I don't know where this one's going.
I don't either.
This one started to really heat up.
This is more than a book coming up, but I don't. Anyway, okay. You know, one more question. What was security like around the president? Was it sophisticated enough to actually protect him, or was he indeed an easy target?
Well, he was a relatively easy target, but there's a tendency, I think, to exaggerate in that regard.
Uh-huh.
You know, that Lincoln didn't much care for his security. That's not true. He made every effort he could that night to gain protection He feared assassination. Uh-huh. He had an envelope in his office where he had approximately 100 assassination threats mm-hmm. that he considered serious. He was a relatively easy target. He had Charles Forbes, who was his footman outside guarding the outer door uh-huh. To the door that led to the box uh-huh. in Ford's Theater. And he was supposed to have an armed guard, namely John F. Parker.
Yeah.
But Parker absented himself. And to this day, no one is 100% sure where he went.
Yeah.
But the good bet is that he was next door in Tottleville's bar drinking, because okay. he was a heavy tippler. And he certainly didn't like the stifling atmosphere of sitting in a corridor where he couldn't even see the play.
Yeah.
He could hear the voices, but he couldn't see the play. And he wasn't much interested in plays and theater anyway, John F. Parker. He was a kind of a rascal, to put it bluntly. And he's a guy who loved, you know, the seamy side of Washington society.
Yeah.
And so if he had an opportunity to go next door and have a few, he was going to take it.
Right.
But the evidence is persuasive that he did.
We're talking about a handful of individuals to protect the president as opposed to what we're familiar with now with an entire team.
Yeah, they didn't have entire teams then.
Yeah.
They didn't have a Secret Service in the sense that we have it today. They did have a Secret Service mm-hmm. under Lafayette Baker, but Lincoln was not surrounded by protection, not at all.
All right.
But, of course, nobody expected that Lincoln would be shot in a theater, you know, where there were 1,700 of his supporters there.
Yeah.
So, but Booth, you know, he engineered it with quite a bit of skill.
Certainly.
And he managed to get away, even though he broke his leg.
Yeah, oh my God, he broke his leg. You said before we started that we'd be going a little longer than 10 minutes, and I kind of, you're absolutely right. We could go on much longer as well, but this is a fascinating book. It's Decapitating the Union, and fascinating, definitely worth reading. Are you working on anything else?
I am, as a matter of fact. I have a couple of other books on the Civil War, and I even have one going on Jesus of Nazareth.
Perfect. Hey, a pleasure. It's available everywhere, I assume, John?
It is. If you could just go on, it's on Amazon, of course, and also other online booksellers. It's in some bookstores. You can order it directly from the publisher, Morris Gilbert. But your best bet is just going to Amazon, and you'll see it up there with all of its reviews and so on and so forth.
Perfect. Decapitating the Union. Thank you so much, John. Pleasure speaking to you.
My pleasure, Ron. Thanks so much for the opportunity. Best of luck to you.
Thank you. You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And what lesson do we learn from this? It's safer to sit in the orchestra. I'm telling you. Had Lincoln checked with his horoscope, he may have had some clues about what may be in the cards for him that particular night. A lot of you can't do anything without knowing what's in the stars above, what are in the cards for you. And we do that with our good friend Kip.
Greetings, fellow planet travelers. Kip Starchild here with your horoscopescape for the month. Let's see what the stars have in store for you. Aquarius, there are just two words for your month ahead: regrettable tattoos. Pisces, remember that when one door closes, another one opens. Usually, you probably shouldn't stand around waiting. You could try knocking politely, but yeah. Aries, no one wants to get hit by falling space junk, but you should probably get used to the idea. Taurus, new friends and a new outlook on life are coming your way, thanks to a blow to the skull and subsequent amnesia. Gemini, get out of that bad relationship you're in, because the bad part? Yeah, that would be you. Cancer, keep in mind that naked midnight spearfishing during a thunderstorm only sounds like a good idea when you're really drunk and should probably be taken home instead. Leo, here are your two words for the month: lengthy trial. Oh, and two more: concurrent sentences. Virgo, just when it looks like things are about as bad as it gets, get ready to discover that you are wrong. Libra. A modeling opportunity is coming your way this month. Looks like you'll be the before picture for either weight loss or hair restoration or toe fungus removal. Possibly all three. Scorpio. Change your travel plans soon. The stars are a little clear on exactly why, but apparently everyone in Taiwan hates you. Sagittarius, you're going viral this month, but a hearty dose of antibiotics should clear that right up in no time. Capricorn, you will soon hear from an old flame. Considering your track record, it will probably be about bail money or muling one more load of coke over the border, but just see where that goes. Why not? That's your horoscopescape for the month. I'm Kip Starchild. Until next time, peace.
Ooh. 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 Well, that's it for me today. This has been an experience I will never forget until maybe 5 minutes from now, it'll be out of my mind and gone. We must move ahead. Have yourselves a wonderful day. I wish you peace.